there was a time where they would say, do you have a girlfriend? You date anybody? And then it became clear that Jaren's not dating girls. So let's just dead that conversation, which can also still be offensive when you're queer, because it's like, well, I'm still a human being. I still want and desire love.
Welcome to Dear Culture, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I'm your co-host, Shauna Pinnock, social media director at thegrio.com.
And I'm your co-host, Jaren Keith Gaynor, managing editor at thegrio.com. And this week we're asking, Dear Culture, how do we keep our peace in the midst of family drama during the holidays?
Before we get into the show, you know, I want to talk about a few things, but let's definitely give a little disclaimer for our listeners. This episode might be a little bit heavy, you know, talking about family, talking about trauma, talking about COVID. It can get crazy. So you've been pre-warned. But before we even do that, Jaren, what is on your mind this week?
Well, in the spirit of being around family during the holidays, if you fall into the category of people who want to avoid their family at all costs, up a copy of Barack Obama's new book, A Promised Land. I have my digital copy I've been reading so far, and I'm waiting on the hard copy to come in through the mail. But I'm really excited to read this book because, one, Barack Obama is one of my biggest inspirations, along with my fellow Morehouse brother, Martin Luther King Jr., James Baldwin, Oprah Winfrey, and Barack Obama just represents everything that I want to be. Black and successful, and just deeply compassionate, and a person who inspires people. And Barack, we have I haven't heard from him in about 4 years about his experience in the White House for 8 years. And he's kind of been mum. And we've heard from, obviously, former First Lady Michelle Obama with her book, Becoming, which sold 12 million copies, by the way. I don't know if Barack's going to sell as many copies as our forever First Lady, but there's a lot of anticipation about what Barack Obama was feeling like during this momentous and historic moment in history. He not only was the first Black president, but he had to leave the country during a time where we saw the beginnings of what we see today, which is this upheaval of just racism in this country. And Barack Obama, he endured a lot. He had to face racism and people calling him out his name, including, remember that scene where like he was giving his speech in front of Congress and someone said, you lie. And that was just one example of the many examples that happened throughout those 8 years where there wasn't a respect for America's first Black president. And I really want to see his reflection of those 8 years, because I know for me as a Black person, it was incredibly difficult to watch the Obamas kind of turn the other cheek always. They had to be buttoned up and esteemed, and they couldn't show their anger that they likely felt during those 8 years. And just to give our listeners a little preview, he talks about the obstruction that he faced from Republicans who were determined to ensure that he was a one-term president, which he was not, thank God. But then also, they did everything in their power to ensure that he was not successful. They even took away his opportunity to appoint a Supreme Court justice when it was totally within his presidential bounds to do so. And in the book, Barack, I would say, he's very gracious. He extends a lot of grace to not only the racism of many Americans in the country, but he also extended that grace to Republicans and questioned whether or not he did a good job as president. He admits that while he does believe he left the country a better place than it was when he first inherited the country, he does question whether or not he could have done more. And I think that just speaks to the selflessness of Barack Obama, how he's always internalizing how he can be better. And I admire that, but then a part of me is kind of like, I kind of feel for the Obamas because they never can really say what they really feel because they are in positions of leadership. And even though they're not in the White House anymore, many people look to them to lead and to invoke this very positive outlook on America, even when we know that America is racist as hell. And so I'm looking forward to reading the book. I hope that everyone picks it up. I think it's going to be really, really good.
See, Jaren, I appreciate how, you know, you came in with the positivity because I'm here to drag, right? So for me, I am so incredibly disappointed, not surprised, but disappointed with author Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. So let's backtrack a little bit. Rowling. If you are a Harry Potter stan, you know, and are a person who cares about, you know, the rights of other marginalized communities, because, you know, not everyone who's a Harry Potter stan cares, but let's make that distinction. J.K. Rowling has gotten into a lot of hot fire in the recent years because of a lot of transphobic commentary that she's made. And Chimamanda, a few years ago, kind of agreed with J.K. Rowling. Now, you would think that Chimamanda, who, you know, works with trans rights, writers and, you know, and things of that nature, that in these last few years that she's grown, because I've seen so many members of the LGBT community, specifically of the trans community, who have tried to call her to the table in love and explain how her rhetoric is hurtful and harmful to the trans community. She has not grown from any of that shit, okay? Like, at all. So she was recently quoted as saying that she found J.K. Rowling's essay, which was transphobic garbage, to be perfectly reasonable, you know, in terms of saying, like, well, trans women are trans women. They're not women. And, you know, a lot of things. And anyone who knows me knows that I am a fierce ally of the LGBT community. And I know the times when my voice should be heard, and I know the times in which I have to shut the hell up, you know, because it's not my story to tell. In this moment, I feel like this is a time in which my voice will be heard and should be heard, because what I find so frustrating, particularly with Black women, cisgender Black women, and I have to call us out and call us to the table here, because you also know, Jaren, I'm one of those people that I'm like, I'm a ride for my sisters at the end of the day, regardless of everything, because we're all we got. But there are so many of my fellow cisgender Black women sisters that are so problematic that it is mind-blowing to me. For us to say that, you know, the Black woman, and quoting Malcolm X, that the Black woman is the most disrespected in America, et cetera, and knowing that we are such a hard-hit, marginalized group, to be a part of a group that is also in the business of trying to hurt and harm other marginalized communities is insane to me. I'm sorry. Trans women are women. You don't get to, as a cisgender woman, tell trans women that their experiences don't matter, that they are, you know, actually men. They're not. Cut that out. You don't get to tell them, oh, well, you'll never experience things like, you know, a menstrual cycle or pregnancy. Spoiler alert, there are plenty of cisgender women who do not have that experience either. Plenty. So it's so frustrating to me. You know, and as a matter of fact, I believe we have an op-ed on this on thegrio.com called C-I-S-T-E-R-S that I definitely think the audience should check out. It's honestly, for me, it really just comes down to, damn, Chimamanda, we were all rooting for you, you know? And I think it really takes a hard look at, you know, Black women, especially, we're the ones, we love the gays, we love the transgender communities, you know, we're here for Pose and everything else. But you can't say that you are an ally of that community if you are contributing to the overall harm that goes to that community. Plain and simple. Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie saying, oh, that all she heard was noise when people are critiquing her. I have the B word bubbling on my tongue, you know, but I'ma hold it. But chick, you are out of pocket and you are out of line. Plain and simple. And I'm sorry. What we're not gonna do is play the struggle Olympics. The same way how I will not accept that from woe is me Black men, I'm not going to accept struggle Olympics from cisgender Black women who wanna be like, well, you know, these are just men and blah, 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 blah. No. I'm sorry. Transgender Black women in particular are being killed at alarming rates. Transgender Black women are subject to rape, are subject to harassment, are subject to assault from everybody, not just men, but women too. We've seen viral videos of Black women jumping trans women. That is insane to me. That is crazy to me. And for me, you know, screw it. At the end of the day, I can't, we've already discussed this, Jaren. Cancel culture is not real. I have nothing left for Chimamanda. What I do have left is for my trans brothers and sisters, especially my trans sisters. I love y'all. You do have allies within this community who are not on some BS. And that's what I hope that you hold on to and quiet out Chimamanda's noise. How about that? All right. So, but, you know, let's go ahead and switch gears. Let's pull over and park a little bit. So, you know, G, as you know... As you know, the holidays are almost here, and even pre-COVID, there have always been so many preparations that we have to make just to be like in the same room with family members. You know, when I'm talking about preparations, I'm not talking about who all gonna cook the potato salad. Did, you know, that one crazy auntie add raisins to the mac and cheese? You know, there's always that one who's on a vegan journey. Girl, stop, you know?
I feel attacked.
It's always with that one, you know, which cousins are you going to run to the store with and then come back very hungry and in preparation for Thanksgiving dinner. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the family members who tend to grate your nerves. I could speak personally to that. I, you know, come from Caribbean family members. There are a lot of loud Jamaicans, a lot of loud Guyanese people in my family. I can't be around them too long, but you know, there are some who are going to start brawls over the space tables. And then there are some who just bring toxic energy. We all have those in the fam. So, well, I mean, do you have that in your family, Jared? Let me not be.
I think we all do. I think levels to the toxicity, but I think every family has some level of family drama, yes, for sure.
Exactly. So let's get into how do we protect our peace for the holidays, even in COVID? So as we touched on, this is clearly an unprecedented holiday season because of all the necessary COVID-19 restrictions impacting travel and, you know, limiting overall in-person gatherings. So, G, what is your plan to celebrate the holiday? Are you doing the virtual bit? Are you keeping it in person? And if you are doing the latter, I hope you're keeping it real, real, real small, just tiny. What are you doing?
Well, I do wish I could just say that I'm gonna do the virtual thing, but it's my grandfather's 90th birthday. Oh. And shout out to my grandfather in North Carolina. And so my mom is very adamant that she wants me there. So I'm going to go, but I'm going to wear my mask the entire time. I was there earlier in the summer when my mom got married and everyone was distanced and everyone wore their mask. And I wasn't able to like hug my grandparents and do what we usually do. But it is good to at least know that I'll be able to see my family and just be in the spirit, in the company of family. So I do have a little anxiety about it because the COVID-19 rates are climbing throughout the country. And so I just want to make sure that we take all the precautions and that we're really, really safe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you?
Yeah. So trying to get a bunch of older Caribbean folks on the virtual thing is just not going to work. That's a wrap, right? That's a dub. But, you know, myself, until my prodigal brother returned, we're going to have an episode one day talking about that. We don't talk about that because you know my history of where my brother came from, but you know that story. Listeners, you'll hear that story one day. But for 30 plus years, I was very much so an only child. So, you know, it was me, my mom, and my dad. And we would occasionally have, you know, like the larger family come join us. A few years ago, I hosted like the first ever Thanksgiving where I like cooked. And it was great. However, in times of COVID, hell no. It is just going to be myself, my mom, and my dad, and probably my mother's sister. My auntie has a tendency to like just be popping up here at the house. It's the most random. It is just, and again, loud Guyaneseness. It's just the most random thing. It actually makes me really sad because, you know, I really wanted to see my grandmother this Thanksgiving, but Miss Pearl told me, I love you too, baby, and I want to see you as well, but don't you show up here in Florida because you will not be let inside the house. So yeah, we're just going to keep it very, very tiny, you know, make our phone calls because again, the elders are not equipped for the Zoom. And honestly, I prefer it. You know, I'm really about like my central family unit. I kind of sucks that my brother can't participate. My brother and his wife and his kids are all in Rhode Island. And hell no, please do not travel from Rhode Island to, you know, come see us. As a matter of fact, they were just here like a week or so ago and we left them outside. Like, no, you can't. We're very serious. We will talk to you from the porch to your car. Stay in your car. So, you know, we just want everyone to be safe. But yeah, it's just going to be a different time. But, you know, screw it.
Well, while many people are really excited to be around their families like me, we have to also acknowledge that not everyone have these very flowery emotions about being with family during the holidays. Because for some people, being around family can be really triggering and it can bring feelings of anxiety and fear. Because like I mentioned, we all have family dramas and, you know, those dark secrets that we don't often divulge in public. And so I think it's important to talk about these toxic relationships and talk it out and find resolve during the holidays.
Really care to do it during the holidays per se, because you're not about to ruin my meal. You're not about to ruin my presence. Like, you're not about to ruin like my good jovial energy, right? I do think it is important to discuss family issues, but also I'm of the mindset of we got maybe twice to talk about it. I don't go to three. We got maybe twice. One is that initial, let's have this conversation. The second one is, okay, maybe things are still not resolved. You know, maybe there was a miscommunication. Maybe there was some toxic words thrown out in the first conversation. So let's maybe have the second conversation. I do not do a third.
Well, you're not three strikes, you're out. You're a two strikes, you're out.
And I know that it can come off really cold to some people, but especially in 2020, but even before then, I'm very much a person who believes in protecting my peace. And no one gets to disturb that. And when I say no one, I mean nobody. Like, that's how my parents raised me. If something's wrong, if something's bothering you, you say it, you get it out, and then you go on about your business. And if you're not going to get it out, you let that crap go. Don't ever bring it up again and let it be. You know, for me, I have a particular cousin who, ever since we were kids, and it's a really strange thing to watch in real time, but literally ever since we were kids, because I would spend every summer holiday, like in North Carolina at, you know, that family's house, and then it would be maybe 3 weeks in North Carolina, and then it would be 3 weeks and they'll come back to New York and spend time with us here. We can get along for maybe the first 6 days. The seventh day, something in the atmosphere shifts and we are at a war. I don't know why. I don't really care to figure out why, but that has gone into now, you know, our 30s. And I love her. She can call me tomorrow and need something and she can get it from me in an instant. Do I like her? No. Does she like me? Absolutely not. And that's fine. The last time we really spent any considerable amount of time together was about 4 or 5 years ago at a family reunion. And then years prior to that, we came to physical blows. Yeah, and there's a lot of things to unpack in that relationship, you know, to the point where she got married. I was not initially invited to her wedding. She sent an invitation to my father because she's at a war with my mother right now, her aunt. And she sent a wedding invitation to my father. It was like addressed to Mr. Pinnock and family. So me and my mother are like, oh, we and family now? Because you only know my father by marriage anyway, but cool. Yeah, and you know, she's married. Hell, she could be pregnant right now. She could have a child right now. I don't know. We don't speak. I'm good on her and she's good on me. And that's just where it is. And so, you know, I think if we weren't in a COVID time and if she were to show up at Thanksgiving, there's nothing for us to talk about. Stay on your side of the corner, like we did at family reunion. Stay on your side of the corner and I'll stay on mine and I'll mingle with, you know, family over here and you can be miserable and mingle with whoever the hell you want to, you know, mingle with over there. And I'm of the mindset of, if I'm really uncomfortable, if I really don't want to see you, if I really don't have anything to do with you or talk to you, I will avoid you altogether. My sister-in-law knows that. We took my brother out for his birthday, did not come upstairs to see her, and told my brother to come downstairs, and she knows why. But you know, yeah, I cut people off real quick. It's very easy. What about you, G?
Wow. I mean, first, let me just say, my heart goes out to your family. I know how you are and you're like, I'm good. But, you know, my heart kind of breaks when I hear family having those kind of strifes. But I can relate. You know, I have a half sister who apparently not speaking to me, but she never told me this. I learned this through my half brother. And I'm not sure if you remember, Shauna, but back around Father's Day, I wrote a piece about my dad and how my dad, who passed away in 2011, he didn't accept my sexuality. And we never resolved that part of our relationship. And I guess because I exposed that publicly, my sister was upset about it. But her and my dad had a very complicated relationship. And I think that it triggered something in her. I think that talking about my personal issues with my father maybe triggered her personal issues with my father. And she, instead of internalizing it and resolving that for herself, she projected it onto me. But, you know, I don't know what to do when someone doesn't say that to me directly. You know, I can't address a problem that has never been addressed to me directly. But thankfully, you know, I don't really see her too often anyway. And I'm going to be with my mom and her side of the family. And so I won't have to deal with that right now. But it's that when it comes to family, I think you get to choose your family. As growing up as a gay, queer boy, I had to choose my family very intentionally because my family became my friends because I couldn't expose the more deeper personal parts of me to my family because I was so scared about them judging me for being gay. And so I felt felt ostracized, even though there was no one who specifically said, you know, we won't love you because you're gay, aside from my experience with my dad. And, you know, I think that it's important to talk these things out at some point, but when you're ready. And I know for me and my sister, I'm just not ready to have that conversation. And honestly, I don't think she's ready. I don't think she's in the place in her life to have that kind of real conversation. If she's ready, my arms are wide open because, you know, as you know, I am a source of love. I'm always willing to extend an olive branch. I'm always willing to love anyway.
Beating heart. But
love, love doesn't mean being a fool, and love doesn't mean not setting boundaries. And you can love someone from afar. You can love someone and say, yeah, I don't want to talk to you every day. I'd rather just see you during the holidays. And I got love for you though. Like, if you need me for any reason, I'm here for you. But I think reimagine what it means to be family. But I do hate when families have these broken relationships and we kind of ignore them, because I believe that when things are ignored, they only come up again at some point. Like, it will just keep on showing up in your life the more you ignore them. And so my hope for me and my family, and for you and your family and all the other families out there, is that we just find peace, because this has been a really trying year. And I hope that it helps us prioritize what's really important.
Yeah, well, my family, we don't ignore it. We acknowledge it and we just say we good. But, you know, but okay. So, and this is something of particular importance to me. So how about navigating this holiday, especially like Thanksgiving, Christmas, et cetera, as a single person, right? Now, for whatever reason, particularly with Black folks and white folks, if y'all are watching this, let us know. I don't know about what y'all cultural situation is, but particularly for Black folks, for some reason, when you chat with certain aunts, uncles, grandparents, family friends, who all is at the function, especially the older ones, there's always this question, if you're a single person in the family, of, you know, marriage and settling down, that usually always comes up. How do you navigate that, Jaren?
Well, as a single person, I'll first say that it can be a little bit uncomfortable because a lot of my cousins, for example, are either married or partnered and they have children, and I'm not partnered. I'm single as hell. I have no children. And you do feel pressure to catch up. And I think that's really unfair because your life journey is your life journey. Everyone finds love at different junctures in their lives, and not everybody wants to be in a monogamous relationship, to be honest. Thankfully, my family members don't ask me. They stopped asking me years ago, girl. Like, a teenager, they stopped asking me because, one, being gay is a bit more complicated. So in Black families, when you're gay and they know that Jaren ain't dating girls, after all, they just stop asking because it begins to become rather awkward because they know the answer. There was a time when they would say, do you have a girlfriend? You date anybody? And then it became clear that Jaren's not dating girls. So let's just dead that conversation, which can also still be offensive when you're queer, because it's like, well, I'm still a human being. I still want and desire love. You can still meet me where I'm at versus just ignore me altogether. But what about you? I'm sure for women in particular, the question of the status of your dating life is quite the conversation.
God, yes. So I'll say around maybe after I turned 25 was when the question started being like more pervasive. And that's because, so for my family, how I am in relationships in general, my partner doesn't get to meet my parents until we've been together at least a year, year and a half. And I'm very serious about that. Like, no, I'm not bringing you around these folks. And then for you only to disappear, then them asking me stupid questions later about, well, where you at, da, da, da. They'll know you exist, like face-to-face meeting with you. No, there's only been two people, and I've dated a lot. There's only been two people who have been able to, you know, meet my family. I also, for whatever reason, again, especially with Caribbean people, they just be in the business, right? So me being 33, single, you know, I date, I get my, you know, shaboing boing, you know, my boom chicka wah wah, you know, when I can and where I can and, you know, whatever. But I have my entanglement. But is there anyone in my life right now that I would consider like marriage material? No. I'll probably get a text message whenever this episode airs about, oh, you know, some very large eye emojis. But whatever, I said what I said. My mother and my father have never pressured me in terms of like, you know, are you dating? Are you, what's going on? Honestly, my father would rather I just be a spinster my whole life. That's my dad. That's my dad. Yeah, my daddy is just like, listen, be single, get a dog if you need a kid, you'll be fine. My mom, you know, was more so on the level of like, listen, whoever you choose to bring into your life, just make sure that they're good enough. That's her big thing. But she's never, you know, been one of like, well, are you dating? Do you have any prospects? Like, what's going on? Now, My grandmother and my aunt, my mom's sister, my God, knew. I've had to explicitly tell these women, please stay out of my womb's business, okay? Like, my grandmother kind of hit me with, this was the craziest thing. Around my 30th or my 31st birthday, my grandmother, you know, she gave up on the idea of marriage. Because I am very much my grandmother's child. I like things a certain way. I like my space. She thinks I'm insane because I have actively said, like, should I get married? I fully believe, like, me and my husband need to be wealthy because we need to be able to have our own separate wings of the house. We can have a room that we share, but we also need to be able to have our own separate room so that if I don't particularly want to see you today, and it happens, and he doesn't even have to do anything. But if I'm like, you are here more than the furniture, sir, I already know it hits me. And I've lived with exes before. I know when I'm getting to that point. And again, they don't have to do anything wrong. It's just, I'm just like, oh, I feel crowded. You right? You all up in here. You all up in here. Like, I need you to move. Yes. You know, I'm like, listen, man, I kind of just want my own space. Like, I've thought of, God, you know, if I get married, my house that I live in right now, you know, is a family house. Like, kind of don't want you to move in. Like, you know, but for me, it's more so I don't mind your business, you know? So when I have like my aunts and my grandmother, especially who are like, well, do you have somebody? You know, it's Christmas. Do you ain't got nobody? You ain't got no gifts? No, girl, I bought this PlayStation 5 on my own. Mind your business. But yeah, it can be tricky. But I've learned how to, especially during the holidays when you're kind of forced to be around family, I've kind of learned how to bring it back. Of saying, no, hey, we're here about family, not talking about my theoretical family that hasn't happened yet. Let's mind our business and enjoy the food that I've prepared and the copious amounts of liquor here. But yeah, it can be annoying, but yeah, you got to figure it out.
Yeah. Family, they mean well. They do it out of love.
They do it out of nosiness, Sharon. They do it out of
They could be being nosy as well, but I think it's because we just, as a culture, as a society, we prioritize romantic relationships maybe more than we should. And like you said, we should kind of refocus the attention on family, like focus your attention on building your relationship with your family and bonding, and the love stuff, it'll come with it.
Exactly.
But I can't help but keep thinking about toxic relationships, and especially this year with COVID-19, it's really forced us to prioritize what's important. And I know for you, Shauna, and for many people, prioritizing your mental health and your peace is like really important. Do you think that the holidays could be used as an opportunity to heal? Do you think that there's a way to both prioritize your sanity and also kind of find resolve with those toxic relationships?
I mean, in a perfect world, sure. But, you know, I think I spent so many years prioritizing trying to make people, especially my family, like me, that now I don't give a damn, you know, to the detriment of my own mental health, to the detriment of my own, like, self-worth. And I've gotten that back over the last few years, and I have no desire to ever give that up again. You know, and so for me is, yes, family is very important, but you know how they say, like, oh, blood is thicker than water? Oil is thicker than blood, far as I'm concerned. Like, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's almost like I think of when you're on a plane and they tell you, you know, if the mask dropped down, you got to put the mask on yourself first before you can help somebody else. I'm going to help me first at the end of the day. I can't heal anything with my family until I am healed personally. And I can't be healed personally if I'm worried about their crap. If I'm worried about, okay, what are they mad about with me today? What have I done to offend, upset, piss off, you know, whatever whims of any of my family members? Unless I'm like dead wrong, you know, seeing family is great and it's sweet and it's wonderful. But if me seeing family has any chance of potentially putting me in a funky mood, potentially having me, you know, have an emotional downward spiral, the hell, I'm gonna stay in the house and play this Miles Morales game and call it a day on this PlayStation 5. Like, no, I just. So what about you, G?
Yeah, I feel you. I think you're right. I think it really is important to prioritize yourself, like your needs first, because many of us have mental health struggles. I go to therapy every single week to kind of talk out many of the things that happened in my childhood and the things that are still happening in my young adulthood and, you know, having a demanding career. It's a lot to balance. And sometimes there's just no room for family. But because of the year that we've had, we've seen people bury family members. I can't help but offer up that it's important to also consider the fact that you might not see your loved ones tomorrow. And I think it would be so heartbreaking to have unresolved issues with a family member and God forbid you or them go on to yonder and there's no resolution. And I know people who have that regret and it follows them for the rest of their lives. And so it's complicated. It's not an easy fix. And there really isn't a right answer. I think you have to do what's best for you. Do what's best for your spirit, for your soul. But when you're ready, you know, have that conversation because life is just
Jared,
too short.
You are so sweet because I swear the listeners are going to think I'm a cold piece because we're not like out of sight, out of mind. If I were, you know, God forbid, if I were to go before you, like, and you got a problem with me, what the hell do I care? I'm dead. Like, you know. Yeah, but you know, either way, I think, you know, you kind of wrapped it up really wonderfully there, G. Like, no matter what, we have to protect our peace this holiday season and beyond. And my only hope would be that everyone could learn how to be unapologetic about it. Like, sometimes being selfish is best, and we don't have to think of being selfish as like this terrible thing. Sometimes being selfish in terms of prioritizing yourself isn't necessarily a bad thing, so long as it keeps you on the way together and copacetic. Amen.
Amen to that.
We want to remind our listeners to support your local Black businesses and religious institutions and donate to your local organizations. The business that we'll be highlighting this week is Natural Beauty, a vegan beauty brand that inspires others to live their authentic, confident, bold, and toxic-free lives. Visit Natural Beauty, that's NETTURAL beauty.com. The Griot has published a list of 50-plus Black businesses to support during the coronavirus pandemic. If you'd like your business to be featured, email us at info@thegriot.com. That's GRIO.com.
Thank you for listening to Dear Culture. If you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star review, subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast, and share it with everyone you know.
And of course, please email all questions, suggestions, and compliments. We love those to podcast@thegriot.com. The Dear Culture podcast is brought to you by The Griot and executive produced by Blue Talusma and co-produced by Sunda Sasan, Kyrie Williams, and Kevin Y. Brown.